Welcome to That Anger Management Crap. I'm your host, Matthew Blattner. Each week, I will cover a topic related to anger and its many subtleties and nuances. I hope that this podcast will show that anger management is not all about take a deep breath and count to 10. So stay tuned as we explore that complex emotion of anger. Today, we're going to have a guest who has struggled and suffered with anger. And he's going to come on, tell his story, share with us as much as he's comfortable with, and we'll kind of go from there. We'll see how this experiment translates into maybe more of this, maybe less of this. Maybe this will be crap. I don't know. We'll see. But we are joined by Patrick today. So, Patrick, how's it going?
Good, good. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you come on. I think this is going to be a very interesting sort of change a little bit and kind of give another perspective on this. So, let's start with what brings you to me today. What is going on that made you reach out and go, man, I'd like to talk to somebody and maybe do something crazy and share it with, so far I've got 20,000 downloads. So you're sharing with 20,000 people, maybe.
I think what kind of prompted me was hearing the podcast with you and Chrissy and how your story was, how much that related to me. And then I thought, you know, I could share my story. And I think there's a lot of other people that can relate to them and let them understand that, look, you're not by yourself. You're not alone. And you know what? There's a lot of guys who struggle with this and we're all going to get through it, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing that a lot of, especially men are very loners. We don't want to really We don't reach out. We're not comfortable with that. And I think to be able to do that, reaching out in a safe environment, like a podcast or a YouTube or something like that, where you're still that safety of anonymity, but you can still reach out and see other people are struggling is a huge, huge thing for especially guys, like you said. So what's going on? What is the number one thing for you right now that maybe we can dive into and I can help you sort of tackle to the best of my ability?
Well, do you want the backstory?
Whatever you're comfortable with, man. This is all you.
So I'll tell you, so when it comes to dealing with anger, anger's always been a problem in our relationship. And it's usually results in me exploding, kind of like, in like a lion, out like a lamb kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Where I'm quick to anger, but once I get that anger out, I soften up real quick and I kind of usually really ashamed of how I acted. And it kind of stems from, I had parents growing up who constantly fought over me. I don't want to say fought over me, but more used me as a weapon to fight each other.
Sure.
And so conflict, fighting, those were norms in my life. They weren't the exception. They were the usual thing. My mom and my stepdad split up 11 times from the time I was 6 to the time I was 18 and left the house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that meant every time they split up, that meant a new school. That meant, you know, a new place to live. That meant more fighting. So it was, like I said, the fighting was the norm. So that followed me as I became an adult. Now I'm in a serious relationship. I love my wife, Christina, very much. We've been married going on 9 years now. But anger has always been an issue with us. Usually she's been really good about dealing with some of my anger and my anger outbursts and calming me down. But things kind of came to a head last year. And I didn't realize how much anger manifests itself in other ways other than outbursts. So my wife last year kind of pulled away from our relationship a little bit, and it caused some distance and some distrust. And some of it had to do with my anger issues. Some of it has to do with some personal things that she was going through. But that caused my anger to manifest itself in a whole lot of different ways, in being distrustful, in being controlling, in being manipulative. And it really drove a wedge through, you know, basically winter into spring here. A little over a month ago, my wife just came to me and she said, I'm going to my mom's. And I'll tell you, my heart just fell.
I can imagine.
I didn't know what to do with myself. And she's like, look, I just need a few days to figure things out and figure out where I want to go. The first 2 days, she said, I just need you to kind of leave me be. And I couldn't do it. Again, that anger swelled. I was manipulative. I was trying to get her back here, trying to be controlling, and for those first 2 days. And that caused a, you know, it was causing even more and more problems. Finally, I turned, and I talked to you about this book before. It was my first really kind of look into Buddhism, mm-hmm. which is what kind of grabbed my attention with a lot of with what your podcasts were talking about. And the book was called Cow in a Parking Lot, and it sounds like a children's book, but it's actually really good. And it applies a lot of Zen Buddhism to anger management. And I started to quickly realize that I found where I was being controlling, where I was being manipulative, where I was being angry, and how that, and recognize all those signs that were popping up. Mm-hmm. Now, I have a job in which centers around being a lot of customer service, but that means that a lot of times my days are slow. That means out of a 10-hour workday, I might be actually free and just hanging out for 7 hours, which means I can do a lot of reading.
Yeah.
And I would literally get through what would usually take somebody, you know, several weeks to read, a couple of weeks to read. I was reading in a day or two. I was actually really able to put forth a lot of effort into understanding my anger. That's when I stumbled across your podcast, and I was really liking the podcast. And we talked a little bit, and you suggested some other books. And the one I'm reading now, it was one of the books that you had mentioned. Let me look it up real quick.
No, I actually just started reading that book you're talking about, The Cow in the Parking Lot. Uh-huh. And it's actually really good. I'm kind of surprised at how similar it is to some of the other stuff I've read. I figured it would be way more spiritual and way more Zen than it actually has turned out to be.
Yeah, and I think what I liked about it was that it could, even for like a novice like me, I could relate to it. The second book that you mentioned that I started reading is When Things Fall Apart.
Oh, good book.
It is. I will tell you, that's a little more advanced. So I had to really, like, I would get partway through the books. She would be talking about different aspects of Buddhism, and I'd have to stop. Okay, I need to go look this up and see what they're talking about here. I'm going to read it, but I thoroughly believe that to understand a book, you should read it 3 times at least.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Because the first time of the book through, you're just, it's like coming to a new city. It's like you're just getting your bearings, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's not until that second read that you start to realize, oh, you know what? That was kind of an interesting point that they made right there. And you start having some revelations in it.
Oh, yeah. No, I completely agree. I'm like that myself. I will get a book. And there's one I read, which, by the way, if you haven't checked this one out, I wholeheartedly recommend it too. Nonviolent Communication. By the way, for anybody out there listening, if you are a reader, highly, highly recommend Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg. I've read that book. The first time I picked it up, I read it through 4 times back to back to back. And now about maybe once or twice a year, I pick it back up and read it, because it's the value in that book is tremendous in what it will teach you on how to handle anger, how to handle communication, control, like you were talking about. Mm-hmm. Control is a huge aspect in that book that really kind of, it opened your eyes to a lot of the things that you didn't realize were actually underlying that need for control, which isn't actually a need, which we'll get to that in just a second.
As I got more and more into it, we started communicating more and more. Now, the only thing I asked of my wife while she was gone, and we would text every day. I didn't become this manipulative jerk or anything like this. You know, I remember even some of my friends were like, oh, well, she left. You need to change the locks. And I'm like, whoa, this is our house. You know, what says I love you, I want to spend my life with you more than just someone changing their locks? I couldn't believe I was getting advice like that. And it was like, okay, I need to stop talking to you.
Maybe for a relationship advice, yeah, I would say definitely.
Yeah. And I would tell her the things that she needed to know about what was going on in the house, with bills, with whatever was going on here. But I didn't talk about relationships. I just let her have her time. The only thing I asked is that at the end of the day, I want to text you and just tell you that I love you and good night. Just so that you know that everything's safe and everything's good. And that's the only thing I asked. And that's the only thing I did. Mm-hmm. As the days spread on, her willingness to communicate seemed a little bit more and more. At the time, I was tearing down, I have 2 sheds on my property, and I was taking apart a 12-foot by 12-foot shed, basically with a hammer and a pry bar. And part of that was dropping a roof. And part of it, I was up on a 12-foot ladder and I fell. Ended up twisting my ankle. Not a real big deal, but she actually came over to the house, just wanted to look me over and make sure that I was okay. And it kind of was one of those things where it's like, you know, she still cares about me. After about 2 weeks, I asked her, I was like, hey, would you want to go on a date and just meet for a beer at a local brewery that we like to go to? And she was down for it. And we had a good time, but she still needed some time, about another week. And finally, after that, she said, look, you know, I want to fight for this relationship. It's going to take counseling. It's going to take a lot, but I've seen a lot of change in you. Mm-hmm. And she came back and we've been working ever since. And I'm really picking up on a lot of the different things that she's working on. Like even just this morning, I was getting ready for work. She decided that she was going to work from home today. And so she was helping me get ready. And I was just kind of teasing her and joking her with her a little bit. And she stopped and she said, look, you're getting me really frustrated. And it sounds small. It sounds like a small thing to do, but I immediately understood. I was like, okay, hey, look, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to frustrate you. I apologize. I love you. And stuff like that. And she's like, you know, the old me wouldn't have told you that. Mm-hmm. The old me would just expected you to know. And I think that's one of the things that it's an expectation, I think, of a lot of women. They just expect guys to understand what they're going through. And honestly, I tell her, I was like, look, you got to hit me over the head with a crowbar because that's what it's going to take to get through to me.
Oh, yeah. I think there's a lot of truth. I think a lot of guys do that, too, though. I think a lot of guys are oblivious to the fact that we need to express how we're feeling, what's going on, what we're needing for the other person to know. Because, I mean, not to my knowledge, and maybe somebody out there has that relationship, but my wife sure as hell is not a mind reader. I wish she was. Life would be so much easier. So much easier. I could probably get, well, anyway, side note on that one. But one of the things I think that you realized, and I think you realized it unintentionally, is this counterintuitive idea. And it took me years, literally years, because I'm very slow on the uptake. But when we let go of control, when we allow the other person to have their space, their freedom, their autonomy, it's amazing how much the more they draw into you. Like you were saying with your wife, when I was at my most violent and controlling with my wife, she didn't want to have anything to do with me. She would be gone all the time. She'd be working till 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night. And it was when I let go of that control after I went to jail and got into classes and everything that I was seeing, the more I kind of let go of those reins, right? The more she drew in and didn't want to leave and didn't want to be gone all the time, was enjoying our time together. I think That's something that's really hard for people to understand, especially control freaks like me. I don't know about you, but I'm a huge control freak, still am to this day. We have this feeling that if I let go for even a minute, if I even loosen my grip a little bit, everything is going to spin out of control. The whole world's going to fly apart. I don't know what to do then because I'm not in control. It scares the hell out of you because what do I do? What's my place? What am I supposed to control now? If I can't control the world and everything around me, you're freak.
Right. And I totally agree. And I am that way to a certain extent. And I think that's, you know, my anger kind of drove that. It feels good to let go of that. Really does. It feels like a huge weight off of you.
I have let go to the point, and my wife and I have been married we've been together 15 years. We've been married 14 years or been married 14 years. It has only been this last 6 months of our relationship that I have let go so much that she now has in total control of finances. Even a year ago, that would have never happened. My wife handles all the finances, checkbooks. She pays the bills because I tried it for so long. I'm not good at it. I suck. I don't deal with money. I'm terrible with money. She's ran multi-million dollar stores before. She's good with money. But my controlling brain didn't put two and two together and go, hey, she's done this before. She's run million-dollar plus stores and made them profitable. She should probably do the finances. But it's letting go of that control that, no, I didn't want to do it. And now that I've let go of it, like you said, it's so much better. I'm calmer, more relaxed. I don't have to stress about paying bills. She's got all that stress now, which is great.
I remember the first time that, you know, when I was reading these books and I was really learning to let go of my anger. And I was driving to work. I have two cars. My Audi is my daily driver, but I have a very custom built Volkswagen that's a show car. And I drive the Volkswagen 1 or 2 days out of the week just to kind of, you know, get the fluids turning in it and rotating the tires and all that stuff just so, you know, a sit car will break down. But when I drive it, I usually stay in the right-hand lane. I'm casual about, you know, I'm not trying to hot dog or anything like this. And I'm sitting in the right-hand lane. This car is behind me, following me for a while, and then finally blows by me. And I'm like, you know, 3-4 car lengths off the car in front of me. And he slams on the brakes, jerks over, and I'm having to slam on my brakes just so he can get around me, one car, to exit the freeway, the same exit I'm exiting on. And the old me, I'm a pretty big guy. I'm 6'1", I'm probably about a solid 260 in third degree black belt in Shaolin karate. I've trained in martial arts almost my whole life. And the old me would probably have been like, I'm going to go pick a fight with this guy. But I just kind of like took a side because I recognized my anger was kind of swelling up, that kind of swirling in your gut that kind of starts to come up. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of like take a deep breath and I kind of put my hands up a little bit and you're like, you know what? I have no idea what that guy's going through with right now. He may be responding to something. Something may be going on at home. He may be late for work. I don't know, whatever. But no matter what I do, I'm not going to make that situation better. So just let it go.
Yeah.
That was one of the teachings that I learned in that Kalana parking lot, was that just take things at face value. Don't look into them. Don't try to fill in the blanks with something that's not there.
Yeah. So I think you're absolutely right. And one thing I think is important thing to point out right now, because everybody listening to the title of this book is going, this has got to be the dumbest thing ever. So I want to kind of explain the title of the book, The Cow in the Parking Lot, right? So at the beginning of the book, he talks about a situation. You're in a parking lot and you're looking for a parking space and you're driving around for a long time. You can't find anything. Finally, you see somebody's reverse lights go on, right? And you wait and you stop and they back out and they're leaving. And as you're getting ready to pull into this space, another car comes barreling down in this lane, backs up and pulls right into the space that you're trying to get into. Probably you're going to be angry. You're going to be pissed off. You're going to be ready to fight, like you said, ready to get out and fight that guy and teach him a lesson for being so rude and arrogant and an asshole, right? But what if the same thing happened? What if you're getting ready to get in that parking spot, you back out, and as you're getting in, a cow comes walking in and sits down in that parking spot? Because before there was a parking lot there, it was a pasture, and that cow would come there every day about this time and sit in that spot. You're probably not going to have the same reaction. You're probably not going to be as angry. It's going to be a cow on the spot, got to go find something else. The only thing that changes in that situation is our interpretation of it. We know the cow isn't out maliciously taking the spot from us and wanting to be a jerk and all of those things, whereas the guy in the car, we assume, we interpret his behavior as being violent, as being aggressive, as being a slight against us. So that's where that title comes from. And I thought that was a good time to kind of dive into that, because we interpret people's behavior to mean something that most likely is not the case, especially violence, right? And I want to take a moment. I haven't talked about this on the podcast yet, and I think now is a good time. Let's talk about violence. And you're on the show, so I'm going to make you the guinea pig for this, like I would used to do in my classes. Don't hate me. It's actually kind of an interesting experiment. So what would you say violence is? If someone was to come up to you and go, this is violence, what would be your definition?
My gut reaction is to sit there and say that it would be the physical act of harming another.
Sure. I would wholeheartedly say that's violence. So would we call then name calling? If we're sitting there calling somebody a name, you're stupid, you're an asshole, you're, I don't know, pick something. Would that be an act of violence, do you think?
I guess not to me, but I might see how some people can interpret it that way.
For sake of argument, let's say that also is a form of violence, right? What about, and this one kind of throws people for a loop, what if you and your wife are in the middle of an argument and your reaction to the argument, which I'm a master at this, by the way, is to go silent? Would that be an act of violence?
I'm going to say no.
You would say what most people would say, and I would disagree for one simple reason, and that is because of a definition that I've came across that is so eye-opening to why people react the way they do to certain behaviors, that this idea totally revolutionized the way I approach most things in my life. So I'm going to give you a definition. I'm going to give everybody a definition of violence. And I want you to remember this as you move forward. And I'll tell you why in a minute. So the definition we're going to use is any action that separates us from our empathy and compassion for another person. So let's think about that, right? Any action that separates you from your empathy and compassion for another person. By using that definition now, we can certainly all agree violent aggression, like physical violence, right, is violence. Hitting somebody, punching, kicking, right? Definitely an act of violence. You're not feeling compassion or empathy for that person in that moment, right? Probably agree that name calling also would now be considered an act of violence through that definition.
Yes, agree.
would we not now say that the silent treatment is that? Because you've lost your ability to be compassionate for that person by choosing to not engage, to not interact.
I would have to agree with you. You're right.
Now that we have this agreement, and we're all, hopefully all of us are on the same page. If you disagree with me, by all means, throw me a comment on the site. Yell at me, tell me I'm an idiot. I'm totally on board for that. But now that we have this definition, I want to explore now what happens when we use violence against somebody in anger, right? Let's take, for instance, my go-to method, or used to be my go-to method, of silence. Most of us, before we had this idea, would probably stop and go, well, why the hell is she so mad? What had happened? All I did was, I didn't say anything. I didn't do anything. Right? I just sat quietly and let her vent and talk. Why did she get so mad? Well, because she got so mad because she interpreted our actions as either uncaring or, in that particular instance, as a violent act. And whenever anybody is confronted with violence of any kind, we have to defend ourselves. We have to jump to our own aid, so to speak, and confront that person for that violence. So now that we have this idea in our heads and we realize that violence is more than just hitting and kicking and punching and all of those things, we can sort of interpret people's behavior differently. We can see why all I did was say that she was lazy today for not doing the yard work or not cooking dinner or not cleaning the house or whatever. I don't know why she got so pissed off and angry and started a fight and do anything to her. Well, yeah, you might have. That's definitely an act of violence, and violence needs to be confronted with more violence. So what do you think? Is that, I mean, you've read a couple of books now, so this may not be new information to you, but what do you think? Does that kind of change the way you're interpreting and seeing behavior as we kind of move into this path of the idea of this being violent?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. In fact, that's probably one of the things where I started to realize, and I think part of me had already agreed with you. I just didn't see it along those structured lines, how you laid it out. Because it wasn't until I read these books that I realized that my controlling behavior, that my distrust, my all that kind of behavior, that I was, the passive aggressiveness, were ways that were manifesting themselves from my anger. So yeah, those were ways in which I was actually being violent to my wife.
It's funny you say distrust. I had this saying that I used to tell my wife, and her and I joke about it now, but back when I was an asshole, my favorite thing to say to her was, baby, I don't trust you when you're going out. I don't trust everybody else. You, I trust. Everybody else, I don't trust. And anybody that's been in that relationship or that kind of relationship knows that's total bull.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter. It's you putting the distrust onto in kind of a passive aggressive way to onto your spouse. And I totally get that. I've done the same thing.
Oh yeah, we joke about it now, but yeah, that was always my go-to when she would go out with friends. So now we can joke. God knows we couldn't before, but it's kind of nice to be in a place. And it sounds like you and your wife are hopefully going to start getting to that place again where those stupid things that you used to do, like for me, was checking the gas gauge before I left for work to make sure she didn't go more than a couple of miles when I was at work, or just stupid shit like that that had no purpose other than to be passive aggressive and to control every aspect of everything she did.
You know, the nice thing about letting go of your anger, it's not like when you quit smoking, or if you've been smoking or you've been drinking and you're trying to quit those things, people fight every day, you know, as a struggle, as a temptation. Anger is kind of not that way. Once you let go of that anger, every time you let go, every time you recognize it, every time you see it and you stop yourself and you say, look, you know what, that's not, I need to change the way I'm kind of approaching this. It gets better and better. It's an instant reward.
I would agree with that, except I think there is a certain level of checking and balancing that you've got to maintain with yourself. And the reason I say this is, and I said this on the podcast, I didn't dive real deep into the idea though, but it was last year on Mother's Day that my wife and I got into a major, major blow up. And so I'll tell you guys what happened. I don't really want to. It's kind of totally embarrassing for me, but I'll lay it out there for y'all, because why the hell not? So it was Mother's Day night, and we have a split unit in our house. We've got an AC unit that controls downstairs and an AC unit that controls the upstairs. Last summer, the upstairs unit took a shit and it quit working. So I was doing laundry and I had thrown some laundry into the dryer. Well, if you leave the laundry room door open while the dryer's running, the upstairs gets even hotter than it normally would. We live in Georgia. It's hot in the summer. So she got angry at me for leaving the dryer door or the laundry room door open while I had the dryer going. And we were getting ready to go to bed. And she said something to me. I don't even remember what she said. But I took it as an attack. Oh, I remember what it was. She basically attacked my parenting of our children because it was, how could you leave the laundry room door open with your kids up here sleeping? And looking back on it now, I see what she was saying. She was concerned for their comfort and their safety and their well-being. Makes sense. At that moment, though, that's not what I heard. I heard, you're a shitty dad. How dare you treat your children this way? And I immediately went into the old violent me. And this is the thing I struggle to say, but I physically, for the first time ever in our relationship, at that point, 13 years, actually physically put my hands on her and pushed her into the laundry room. Not proud of it, not happy about it. It is what happened. And it was at that moment and the days that followed that I realized that just because I've been teaching these classes since 2010 and I've gotten so far in my own anger and violence, I still have a long way to go and I need to be able to check and balance myself because it was back last year that I kind of sold my business, my anger management classes, my family violence classes, and had kind of stepped back from running those as much. And so I'd quit learning, I'd quit reading, I had quit doing all of the things that had kept pushing me to be a better person, that I realized that can't stop. If I'm going to continue down this path and continue to fight to be the person I want my daughters to grow up and marry, the person I want my wife to be married to, it's got to be a constant battle. It's got to be a constant step forward. You can't let go. You can't stop. Otherwise, at least for me, I don't know about you or anybody else out there, but...
No, I agree with you. I agree with you.
I think you can't take your foot off that gas pedal, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, right?
I totally agree with you. No, I guess the only point I think I was trying to make, and let me tell you just real quick, I think that's amazing that you just shared that story. That took a lot of inner fortitude. I'll say it politically correct like that, that for you to talk about that, and I appreciate that. That's was really cool of you. But I guess my point was that the reward for catching yourself and feeling good about the way you handle the situation is instantaneous. It's good, and it's kind of like going to the gym. You know, you when you go to the gym, you come out of the gym, and you feel good. You're like, hey, you know what? I feel like I got something out of that, and it makes you want to go back and do it again. And now it's like the next time that anger just kind of swells up in me a little bit, it becomes a little bit easier for me to handle it in the correct way versus kind of falling down a bad path.
So there's actually a psychological, neurological reason for that. And I agree with you completely. I think there is some truth to that. And that as you continue down this path, it does get easier and it does get more intuitive. And it's no longer a thought process of going, okay, well, this is how I want to behave in this situation. And I want to do this and I want to do that. And I don't want to be the guy that's passive aggressive or violent or any of those things. But there's actually a legitimate psychological reason for that. And it's to me, it's fascinating. I'm a nerd. Nobody else out there is a nerd other than me. Feel free to tune out for a minute. But there's this awesome thing that goes on in the brain. And science for years, scientists, psychologists, neurologists, they all thought that the brain was this static thing. Once you hit about 20, 21, 22, it just kind of quit. You know, the whole can't teach an old dog new tricks idea.
Mm-hmm.
And that idea lived for so long that it just became part of truth. Well, recently they came to a discovery that that's not actually the case. The brain is very plastic. You can change it. You can manipulate it. You can build new pathways up until the day you die. And they call it neuroplasticity. It's an amazing thing. If you've never heard of it, look it up. It's so cool. But basically what it is the more you do something over and over again, so in this case, anger, the more you respond to anger in a healthy, nonviolent, non-confrontational way, the more those pathways are built and the stronger they become, and the more the old pathway that says, hey, you just did something awful to me, I should fight you, or I should be violent or aggressive or whatever to you, those pathways start to die.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense, yes, you're absolutely right. As you change your behavior and change the way you act, it does become easier and something that just doesn't require thought anymore.
I've seen that actually manifest itself in a way. Like I said, I've trained for like 15 years in Shorin Ryu Karate. And when the Cow in the Parking Lot actually kind of touches on this with about the difference between the limbic brain and the core or the cortex, and that when we respond to something like an act of aggression, that fight or flight reflex and anger being part of that, that's our limbic brain. It's an instant response. It's very primal. When you train in martial arts, you train to not allow that primal limbic brain to respond, but the cortex. And that requires years and years and years of training, you know, doing the same thing, repetition over and over, like you were saying, so that you respond to whatever the threat or whatever it is that's coming to you with the cortex, with what you're trained to do. So absolutely, that you know, training to handle an angered situation, a situation where your anger is swelling and you need to still stay in control and deal with things and function through them, that takes a bit of I don't want to say muscle memory, but kind of mind memory, maybe, where you're trying to work through all those different things over and over again, and it becomes easier and easier.
Yeah, completely. No, it's funny because you've done martial arts. We're actually talking about my son, unfortunately, has my penchant for anger and violence. He's 5 now, and we've got a lot of issues with him with that. So my wife and I were talking about it today, as a matter of fact, that we're going to next year, when we get some bills paid off and have some free money, there's a Taekwondo studio down the street from us. Him and I are going to go take classes together, because for that very reason, I want to give him that ability to access those parts of his mind that will give him that ability to control that anger and that violence and use it in a structured way. I think that's something a lot of people, or at least I didn't for the longest time, realize that martial arts, especially Eastern martial arts, aren't designed for violence and aggression. The whole point of the study and the martial art is to teach you to control those impulses and to control yourself in a way that isn't going to be violent and aggressive, because you can't beat an opponent when you're angry at an opponent, because the part of the brain that needs to control you in those moments totally shuts down.
Correct. Yep. You start relying just on that limbic brain, and you know, just nothing more than kind of animalistic responses.
That's another reason for everybody out there to get control of that anger. You cannot control anger in anger. The only way to control your anger is to get control of it before it happens. And I know that sounds crazy. Trust me, I thought that for years. But you're never going to master that anger as long as you either fear it or allow it to take over who you are. You've got to come to terms with it. You've got to accept it as being what it is, and be able to step back and take that deeper, maybe 10,000 foot view of it, as opposed to looking at it in the midst of the hurricane.
Yeah, I totally agree. And honestly, I've seen it, you know, as much as I read the books, reading the books was great. Putting into practice, it's a little bit harder.
I wholeheartedly believe that. What is it? It's 2019. I'm 9 years into doing this hardcore full-time thing. And As you all heard today, it's even last year, I've had my moments of falling back and slipping. So it's not an easy process, and it takes a tremendous, tremendous amount of work and effort. And I think that's what, at least the groups that I'm in on Facebook and the other people I've talked to, I think that's kind of what we struggle with as people, especially now. We are a very instant gratification, social media. I want it now. Give me a pill. Give me something so that I don't have to do any work, but I can get control of whatever it is. And that's not how anger works. Not if you really want to get to the core of it and understand it. I've heard a lot of people talking about using different medications to get control of their anger. And if that works for you, great. If you're somebody out there doing that, great. Use it as a stepping stone, right? Just like the whatever that weight loss pill is they've got now. There's nothing wrong with those things. But don't make that your end-all, be-all, this is how I'm going to control my weight or my anger or whatever. It's a stepping stone. It's a way to get your brain clear, to be able to focus now on what has to be done for a long-term change. And that, I think, is the most difficult thing to understand and to comprehend. You're not going to change overnight. Like we talked about, I think it was last week, personal growth is a constant battle, 2 steps forward, 1 step back. You're never going to get there overnight. Take it slow, man. That's all you can do.
Thanks, man. I absolutely agree.
So what time is it? We are coming up. I don't want to make this too long. So what would you like to say to somebody out there who's dealing with what you're dealing with in your shoes right this second? Their wife, girlfriend, fiance, husband, boyfriend, whatever, has just walked out. They said, man, you're too angry. You're too violent. You're too controlling. I can't handle this anymore. Give them one thing that you have learned just in your short time frame that might help them get back to where you have come so far.
Well, I would say start with what you can actually affect. You can't change your spouse. You can't affect them right now. But what you can focus on is you. You know, so it, for me, it was turning into Buddhism and kind of pulling the teachings. Because when I thought about, you know, anger management, that's the first thing that comes to mind. You don't ever see the Dalai Lama going off on somebody. I mean,
yeah.
So that's where I kind of turned and focused my attention and was about me and changing me. Get the help. Talk to people that can actually get out there and help you. But make that change and focus on you. And when you do that, then you can work on your problems with your spouse.
I completely agree. And I also agree with about the Buddhism. I started diving into it really hardcore about a little less than 3 years ago now. And I have found that it is a tremendous, tremendous value in working with anger and violence and control and all of those destructive, painful emotions that we all live with every day. The thing I think that people have a really hard time with is Buddhism is not something that's going to replace your religion. If you're Christian, Jewish, Muslim, whatever your beliefs are, the idea, don't replace that religion with Buddhism, but use it as well as the Dalai Lama says, right? Don't use Buddhism to be a better Buddhist. Use it to be a better whatever you already are. I think there's a tremendous amount of value to that. There's so much teaching. Think of it as a psychology or a philosophy of life, right?
It absolutely is.
Yeah, and it, like you said, it will open your eyes to a lot of the ways that you have been harming yourself and others and not realizing it. So on that note, I really do appreciate you sharing, Patrick. I know it's something that, especially the first time you come out here and you kind of share your story to a wider audience, it's kind of nerve-wracking and scary and wait for that whole judgment of, oh, this asshole, how could he do that? But I know, trust me.
It can be. It's been enjoyable though. It's actually been really, really relaxing just to talk to you about it.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I think there's something cathartic about that opening up. And that's why I used to teach classes in a group setting, because it's comforting to know that you're not the only one struggling. You're not the only one who deals with this. There's other people out there fighting these same battles. And on that note, y'all, I am going to remind everybody on the 20th of this month at 8:30 Eastern time, I'm doing a group online session similar to this. I won't record it. I'm not going to put you all through that. But we'll all get together, and anybody that wants to join us can. It's going to be on zoom.us. I'll send the link out on the website and on my Facebook. Join us. Join me. Let's talk about this as a group. Let's get to know each other, our struggles. Let's support each other on this and be more community with us than we are. It's great to listen to me talk. I don't know why you want to listen to me talk. I'm boring as hell, but I appreciate it. But let's do this as a group. Let's get together and really make this a group team effort, guys. And again, Patrick, thank you for joining me. I really enjoyed it. We will talk to you guys again soon. Thank you. If you enjoyed this, please take a moment to leave me a review on iTunes. Find more ways to get in touch with me on my website at angerpodcast.com. There you can leave me comments and find great info about the show. That anger management crap can work for us all. Thanks for listening and stay safe.